You're listening to a podcast of APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. APA Compass airs at 9 a.m. on the first Friday of every month at www.kboo.fm, and our archives are downloadable at kboo.fm/APA Compass. Join our Facebook page, APA Compass Radio, or follow us on Twitter. If you'd like to contact us, we can be reached at apacompass@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sarika Mehta. Today I'm chatting with Paralympic athlete Anjali Forber-Pratt. Anjali was born in India and lived in an orphanage in Calcutta until she was adopted by an American family when she was just an infant. Soon after, she contracted an illness resulting in the diagnosis of transverse myelitis, a neurological disorder that affects the spinal cord. She was then left paralyzed from the waist down. However, this is not a sad story. Anjali's personality is that of a fighting and intensely competitive spirit. Her biography includes competitive wheelchair sports since the age of 5, and just last month, she competed in the International Paralympic Committee Athletics in the World Championships and brought home the gold medal and a World Championship record in the 200-meter dash. She also brought home silver in the 100-meter and silver in the 400-meter, as well as fourth place in the 800-meter dash. In addition to her wealth of athletic achievements, Anjali has done outreach work internationally, working with children with disabilities. She's also a doctoral student in human resources education at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. As if that wasn't enough, she recently published a children's coloring book called All About Sports for Athletics with Physical Disabilities. Welcome to the show, Anjali.
Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm happy to be here.
Great. Well, first of all, my little introduction was actually barely touching the iceberg of your incredible history. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and some of the finer points?
Absolutely. Well, as you heard earlier, I acquired my disability at a pretty young age. At such a young age, this disability and this life is really all that I've ever known. There's something a little bit funny about being so young when I acquired my disability. And I'm sure that many of you listening in have children of your own or perhaps younger siblings, nieces, or nephews. Well, if you do, you probably know that kids are very egocentric. They think the whole world is according to them. Their reality is built around themselves. And for me, being so young to acquire my disability, I held this naive assumption that all people in the world had disabilities, that it was just a phase that I was going to outgrow. Similarly, how kids, you know, wear purple or go through phases of not eating foods that are round, I just thought this disability thing was something that I was going to outgrow. On the surface, this naive assumption, it might sound a little bit cute, but it actually went deeper than that. Because for me, I truly believed that in order to be a person, to hold a job, to go to school or college, to have a family or to have dreams, to do any of these things that we all aspire to, that I first had to outgrow my disability. Every adult that I met could walk, and so this was a logical assumption to me. So how on earth did I realize that there were this flaw in my childhood logic? For me, it actually all started with sports. It all started for me on Marathon Monday, which is a huge day in the middle of April in Massachusetts. And when I was 5 years old, I woke up super early with my parents and my brothers and sister to go watch one of the largest sporting events in our area. We were there, staked out our spot on the curb, and I had, you know, my cup of water in hand, posters to cheer for friends who I knew that were running, and the excitement was building. But then the strangest thing happened as I was sitting there waiting for this race to start. While waiting for these thousands of runners to go by, there were people in racing wheelchairs that came whizzing by going about 25 miles per hour. I was totally awestruck, and I wanted to try that. Not only that, but I learned that those racers who were whizzing by, the majority of them went to college, many at the University of Illinois. Some had families, and some even had jobs. And I felt empowered that I was now off to live a life, disability and all.
That's incredible. I never would have thought about what you were saying before, that the disability is something you grow out of. And then what an awe-inspiring moment that you see this at the, I think, Boston Marathon, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's really amazing. So then what happened after that?
Well, you know, I firmly believe that for me, that desire to fight and that desire to, you know, live life, it truly is inherent to who I am. It stems from who I am as an adoptee, being disabled. It's just literally in my blood. So after that, I got involved with competitive wheelchair athletics. It all started at a Saturday sports program about 45 minutes from my parents' house. And that was where I got to try every sport under the sun. I tried a little of this, a little of that, and personally, I fell in love with the sports with the speed, namely downhill skiing and wheelchair racing. There's just something really cool about that adrenaline rush.
That's pretty fantastic. So, okay, you were involved in wheelchair sports. What was going on when you were in school as you were growing up in Massachusetts?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things is that whenever you set out to achieve your dreams, such as, you know, going to college or getting an education, there's always going to be obstacles. One thing that I like to share with people, though, is that these obstacles are just opportunities in disguise. Some obstacles, as an athlete, will be physical obstacles, like the time that I actually ran into a stone house. But there's other obstacles that are a little bit more incognito, or like naysayers, or people who don't believe in you. Or in my experience, these are people going through my schooling who told me that you can't. Unfortunately for me, my high school was not at all wheelchair accessible. But worse than that was the discrimination and the negative attitudes that I faced daily from educators. I had a gym teacher who actually said, "I'm sorry, Anjali, you're a danger to the other students. You may no longer participate in gym class." And that was back in, you know, the fifth grade. But I've now come back with, you know, two bronze medals from the Paralympic Games and a gold and two silver from World Championships. And that was no thanks to my gym class.
I just want to back up for a second and let our listeners know, when you were in fifth grade, it wasn't 1952. It was like, what, 1985?
Yeah, something like that. Yep.
So, it says something compelling about the way our words affect people.
Absolutely. I mean, and for me, unfortunately, it didn't stop there. In addition to that, gym teacher, there was the superintendent of my school district at the time, who we were actually trying to resolve some of the issues that I was facing in a kind of an amicable meeting, and he looked at me square in the face and said, "You know what? Sometimes life is tough, and you just have to deal." And then there is also the English teacher who questioned me in front of the entire class as to why I was even in an honors level English class, because in her mind it wasn't like I could go to college anyway. Collectively, these experiences have been with me ever since. I mean, I remember some of these moments like they were yesterday.
Those are awful and hurtful comments for one thing, but I think people need to know the impact that those kind of comments have.
Well, for me, I know that to this day, even today, you know, all these years later, whenever I'm faced with a naysayer in my life who doubts my abilities, I think, because that still happens even today, I do think back to those moments, and I remember how those words really burned me and stayed with me. But I also remember the positive side of that, of how I was able to rise up to that challenge and to overcome the adversity and to not let those words stop me. And instead of letting them stop me, it actually served as a motivator for me to not just to prove them wrong, but to to show myself that I am capable, and to show myself who I really am, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about that high school experience? Because I know that you had a lawsuit with your high school. Can you talk about what happened there?
Yes. So collectively, because of these experiences that I've shared of, you know, English teachers questioning why I was in an honors level class and not being allowed to participate in phys ed, there was a distinct turning point when I decided as a young 14-year-old that I was tired of being walked all over and that it was not my mother's battle anymore. It was really up to me to take matters into my own hands if I wanted to change the outcome, if I wanted an education. And so there I was at age 14. I actually hired my own lawyer and just went home one day and sat my parents down at the dinner table. That's kind of where you go in our house for important conversations or discussions. And I sat them down and I said, "Mom, Dad, I've hired myself a lawyer and I'm going to go through with this. You can support me if you want. You don't have to, but I'd really like it if you would. But this is what I'm doing."
And what did your parents say?
Luckily, they supported me. I am very grateful for that because yeah. I truthfully could not have done what I did without their support. But it's just one of those things that nobody wants to go through a lawsuit. Nobody wants to, and I can tell you, having lived through it, it's a weird way to go through high school.
Yeah, that's a pretty young age to be taking on the world, literally.
It is, and really, I knew going through it, I knew that I was not going to benefit from the lawsuit itself. I was doing it more for the young kids coming up after me. It taught me a great deal about who I am and what I believe in. It shaped my character today to stand up for what I believe in. And so there's certainly some things that came out of it that I did benefit from. But I knew going through it, it was more for those younger kids coming up after me.
For a teenager to say, I'm not doing this for myself, I'm doing this for people who will come after me, is maybe the most mature thing I've ever heard anyone say. With that in mind, let's go back to talking about your sports a little bit. What is the feeling that you get when you take home a medal?
Oh my gosh, it is a huge honor to represent the United States of America, and especially to be on the top of the podium and to hear my favorite song, which is our anthem. It was pretty awesome for sure. It's one of those surreal moments in life that's very hard to describe and equally hard to process. Literally, for me, I had dreamed of that moment for so long that it just felt right to me. But the truth is, the medal itself and my gold medal moment, as amazing as it is, as proud as I am of that accomplishment and as grateful as I am to my coach, Adam Blakeney, and to all of my supporters, it's only a small snippet of the whole piece. To me, what's more important is what I do with it now to help motivate others. And I see it as a stepping stone of sorts. And so I'm excited to really see where this all leads, you know, in the future, especially as I'm gearing up for London in 2012.
And we are all excited to see where you'll head next as well. One more question about sports. Tell me about the most incredible race you ever had.
Well, you know, for me, the most incredible race, I would say, has been that 200 meter that I just came off of at World Championships. Going into that race, I knew that I had to be true to myself. And I know that sounds simple enough, but in reality, in the heart of the buzz of international competition, it's really quite hard to do. And so for me, it was remembering why I was there on that starting line, remembering who I am, not letting other people's predictions or expectations distract me. That just meant that I had to confidently attack each and every race. And so really, when I got to that race, I was calm, cool, and collected at the start of that race, and I just laid it all out there on the track. There was no holding back, no hesitation. And to be honest, I can't tell you much about the race itself because I was living in the moment. It's something that a lot of, pretty much all athletes aspire to. It's this particular moment of fluidity where everything just clicks, and that was my most incredible race.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm chatting with Paralympic athlete Anjali Forber-Pratt. I'd like to switch gears a little bit. We've been talking about sports and what an adventure that's been for you, but it's not the only part of your identity. Tell me a little bit about your experience as an adopted woman.
Absolutely. Well, As you know, I wear many hats and many identities in who I am, and certainly being an athlete is just one of them. But the best way that I can kind of describe this is to talk about one of my favorite foods, cheese. So cheese has always been a favorite food of mine. I was actually nicknamed the little mouse in the house growing up, and to this day I have a drawer in my refrigerator dedicated to all varieties of cheese. But those little mice have kind of left my core looking much like a piece of Swiss cheese. There are gaping holes in my identity, and there are pieces that will never, ever be able to be recovered, no matter what. That's an absolute fact. That's one that I've had to come to terms with. For example, I don't know names of any blood relatives, including my birth mother or father. And I come face to face with that fact every time that I fill out a medical questionnaire. When they want to know your family history, I just write in big letters N-A on the page and hand it back to the nurse. We all have those mysteries in our past. And for some, it might be actual birth history information. Others, it might be some dreaded family secret, or just never really knowing why something is in your past the way you remember it. For me, my family, it is what it is. My brother is also adopted from India, and my parents are both white, and I have another brother and sister who are biological to them. this craziness and uniqueness are what makes our family what it is. Growing up, I'm not really sure that I paid a whole lot of attention to the demographic and the actual complexion of our family. Sure, I remember joking with my brother that we could goof off and just pretend not to be related and no one would ever know the difference. It's been something that now in my adult life, it's taken on more meaning to me as I've worked to fill in some of those holes in my own identity.
You know, speaking of the fact that you and your brother were both adopted from India, tell me about your first trip to India. It was rather recent.
My first trip back to India was actually back in 2006, and it was quite a different trip. It was kind of the first trip I was awestruck, oh my gosh, this is what India is like trip, is kind of how I categorize it. You just can't process everything. It's a complete whirlwind. A good friend of mine summed it up as an invasion of the senses, and boy, was it ever. On that first trip back, I have to say I didn't really know what to expect. I knew that I needed to go to start to learn about this, my identity as an adult adoptee from India. But I was heartbroken when I saw the orphans with disabilities who were left upstairs in these old buildings with no elevator, no windows, no education, no independence, no connection to that outside world. And for me, it was just one of those moments where I was actually struck face to face with what my life could have been. And that was hard to stomach. I went back again, actually, in 2009. And I went in a little bit different for this trip. I went in with no plan, no expectation, no clue what I was doing. I literally just booked a plane ticket and went. That's pretty scary in and of itself, and slightly more difficult being disabled, too. But it was just something that there was something in me that was telling me that I needed to go for that second trip. There was some kind of unfinished business that from that first trip that I still had questions. I was ready to actually process things at that point in time.
And what were you able to process out of that trip?
You know, it was incredible. For me, I realized that India can still be a part of who I am. It's different for me because of being disabled and for living, you know, here in the United States and everything like that. But instead of having it be this whole, like, separate world, I'm learning slowly how it can be integrated into what I'm doing every day. And so part of it involved, on that second trip, I got involved with some more disability organizations over in India. I visited schools for the deaf. I visited hospitals and just to sort of see what was going on and to find ways that I could be a resource and an advocate and an ally for some of the groups and organizations and folks who are over there.
That's a great way to get connected without having to battle and struggle as much. I have a funny question for you. Myself, an Indian American, I have gotten this question my entire life. Where are you from? Followed by where are you really from? Or the what are you question? And I know you get that question too. How do you deal with this question? How do you respond to it?
Well, what a great question. Personally, I feel a little bit uneasy about the question because, like yourself, I do get it all the time. But the reality is that I, too, never really know how to answer it. Chances are I'm going to answer it, give you the answer you're not supposedly looking for, and then having to do this whole runaround thing trying to explain it all.
Yep.
Usually, when I am asked this question, I string everything together into some sort of response like, I'm from Illinois currently, but I was born in India and I grew up just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And I just throw it out there, kind of just like that. And then, you know, we'll see. It's kind of like throwing it out there on the table and then seeing whether somebody wants to find out more from that point on. The reality of the question is that it's complicated. And what I would like to say is that don't ask that question unless you're ready for the whole answer. Unless you're ready to sit down and have that conversation, then do you really care where someone's from and do you really want that whole story? If you do, then great. Then let's sit and have a whole conversation about it. But it's just the way the question itself reads, it kind of sets yourself up for that uneasiness because you don't know what that listener and what that person who's asking you, what they're really getting at.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Thank you so much for sharing your stories. What's next for you on the horizon?
Well, immediately, I plan to actually come full circle with my childhood dream, and I will be competing in my very first Boston Marathon this April.
Oh, fantastic. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. And I'll need all the support I can get because it's quite the distance for a sprinter.
Yes, it is.
I also plan to complete my doctoral degree from the University of Illinois this summer. And I'm also training for the London 2012 Paralympic Games. So those are kind of the next three big things on my list.
Any one of which would be a really big deal for anybody, but you have quite the 2011-2012 planned out, and I am so excited for you. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us, your personal stories. That's a lot that you've had to go through in your life, and you've come out very much on top.
Well, thank you so much.
Is there anything else you want to share with us?
I want to leave you with my motto in life is dream, drive, do. And I encourage all of the listeners out there to chase after their dreams, whatever they might be. Remember that there will always be obstacles along the way, and just to do it, to go live in the moment.
Great. Thank you so much. You're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I've been speaking with Anjali Forber-Pratt, Paralympic athlete, doctoral student, and children's coloring book author. You can follow her blog and keep up with her races and successes at anjfp.com. You can also order her coloring book from the same site, so you definitely should do so. Thank you so much, Anjali. I wish you the best of luck with school and with your races and all of your future endeavors.